Katie Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Even though conspiracy theorists always talk about the elites, they're after you, the people who conspiracy theories benefit most are the elites, because it deflects attention away from the system that has made them billionaires. And it says, no, it's not the system. It's just those three guys. We just have to get those three guys.
Today, Naomi Klein for the hour on Doppelganger, a trip into the mirror world. In her new book, Naomi Klein delves deeply into the culture of conspiracy theories and the growing alliance between the far right and people who once identified as part of the left, including Naomi Wolf, now embraced by Tucker Carlson and Steve Bannon. Naomi Klein describes Naomi Wolf as her doppelganger.
What I've learned by shadowing my double is that the forces that have destabilized my personal world are part of a much larger web of forces that are destabilizing our shared world. And understanding these forces may be our best hope of getting to firmer ground.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Libya, the mayor of the eastern port city of Derna says up to 20,000 people have been killed by Sunday's catastrophic floods, which were triggered by the collapse of two dams amidst unprecedented rainfall. Libyan officials say the true toll may never be known after floodwaters washed whole neighborhoods into the sea. On Tuesday, Libya's prime minister dismissed the need for international aid, though he said Libya does need help locating the bodies of victims who were swept into the Mediterranean.
We do not need aid, not even medication or equipment, nor doctors or ambulances. Thanks to God, we have 400 ambulances that took off. But we have a problem in retrieving the bodies from the sea.
Rescue workers warned of the potential spread of disease and appealed for more body bags. Many of Derna's flood victims are being buried in mass graves. On Wednesday, UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk called on Libya's two rival governments to set aside their differences in order to coordinate relief efforts.
I call on all Libyan political actors to overcome deadlocks and divisions and to act collectively in ensuring access to relief. This is a time for unity of purpose. All those affected must receive support without regard for any affiliations.
The catastrophic flooding in Libya came as a new study found Earth's ecosystems are outside of their safe operating space for humanity. The report in the journal Science Advances warns of imbalances to a majority of key measurements of the planet's health, including biodiversity, fresh water, pollution, and the climate. Climate scientist Johan Rockström co-authored the report.
Six of the nine boundaries are outside of their safe space. The four boundaries that we assessed in 2015 are deeper into the red, so we're continuing to move in the wrong direction. And this is a big concern.
Close to 800 organizations have endorsed climate actions beginning Friday, culminating in a march to end fossil fuels Sunday here in New York at the United Nations. In Morocco, search and recovery teams say they're frustrated that the government rejected offers of foreign aid as the death toll from last week's devastating earthquake nears 3,000. This week, French President Emmanuel Macron sent a message to the Moroccan people that King Mohammed VI had rejected an offer by France to provide direct humanitarian aid. So far, Morocco has only provided access to aid workers from Spain, the United Arab Emirates, the UK, and Qatar. Many survivors in remote villages have been sleeping outdoors since the earthquake struck.
We don't know where we're going to go, what we're going to do, where we're going to live. You know, winter is coming, the rain. You know, winter conditions, rain. We have young children. We have nothing.
The United Nations Special Envoy to Sudan says he's stepping down from the role 3 months after Sudan's military junta declared him persona non grata, something that's not allowed under the UN Charter. Volker Perthes testified to the UN Security Council Monday.
At least 5,000 people have been killed since the start of the conflict and over 12,000 injured. And these are conservative figures. The actual number is likely much higher. What started as a conflict between two military formations could be morphing into a full-scale civil war.
Some 20 million people in Sudan, nearly half the population, face acute food insecurity. 6 million are just one step away from famine. On Monday, leaders of over 50 international human rights and humanitarian groups accused global leaders of failing to take action in the face of atrocities in Sudan. Ukraine's intelligence service says Ukrainian forces successfully launched their largest attack yet on the Russian Navy's Black Sea Fleet. On Wednesday morning, Ukrainian bombers equipped with British and French-made cruise missiles struck a dry dock in the Crimean city of Sevastopol, destroying a Russian amphibious ship and a submarine. Elsewhere, Russia's military said its air defense units thwarted a drone attack over Crimea, while Ukraine claimed to have shot down 17 out of 22 Russian drones launched at targets in southern Ukraine. Here in the United States, a Senate investigation subcommittee has issued a subpoena for documents on Saudi Arabia's $700 billion sovereign wealth fund and its investments in the U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal is probing a proposed merger between the Saudi fund and the PGA LIV Golf Tour. During a hearing Wednesday, Blumenthal and other lawmakers raised Saudi human rights abuses and links between Saudi leaders and the 9/11 attacks.
This week marks 22 years since those horrific attacks. Not only did 15 of the 19 hijackers come from Saudi Arabia, but in the years since, evidence have come to light, compelling and mounting evidence, revealing that the Saudi government may have known or knowingly aided some of these hijackers.
Over the weekend, President Biden shook hands with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman at the G20 summit 2 days before the U.S. commemorated the 9/11 attacks. While campaigning for President Biden vowed to make MBS a pariah over the assassination of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi and human rights issues. Hurricane and tropical storm watches have been issued for much of coastal New England and eastern Canada ahead of the arrival of Hurricane Lee this weekend. The storm, now a Category 2 hurricane, is expected to widen as it crashes into eastern Maine, New Brunswick, and Nova Scotia Saturday, bringing damaging winds and a storm surge that will coincide with spring tides. Members of the United Auto Workers are gearing up for the first-ever simultaneous strikes against the Detroit 3 car manufacturers. UAW President Sean Fain issued a warning to automakers Wednesday ahead of tonight's midnight contract expiration.
The Big Three can afford to immediately give us our fair share. If they choose not to, then they're choosing to strike themselves. And we are not afraid to take action.
The strike action would see workers suddenly walk out of targeted plants while others continue to work in a bid to, quote, create confusion. Fain also said the strikes could escalate to an across-the-board work stoppage by all 150,000 UAW members if talks do not progress. Auto workers are seeking a 40% pay increase, 32-hour work week, return to regular pensions, an end to compensation tiers, and cost-of-living adjustments, among other demands. So far, Ford, GM, and Stellantis, which owns Chrysler and other brands, have offered pay raises between 17.5% and 20%. Senator Bernie Sanders has called on the U.S. public to support the UAW to help, quote, create an economy that works for all, not just the privileged few, unquote. Sanders notes the CEOs of the Big Three have saying their pay increased by more than 40% over the past 4 years, earning between $20 and $30 million each last year alone. The three companies made $23 billion in profits in the first half of this year, an 80% increase over last year. In Texas, a federal judge again declared DACA, that's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, unlawful, blocking an attempt by the Biden administration to codify DACA into a federal regulation. It's the second such ruling by conservative Judge Andrew Hanen, a George W. Bush appointee. DACA will remain in place for some 580,000 recipients and continue to issue renewals, but will not process first-time applications. The decision prompted calls for the Biden administration to prioritize immigration reform and provide a pathway to citizenship for immigrants living in the United States. The New York Legal Assistance Group, known as NILAG, called the ruling inhumane and shameful and said, quote, it's unconscionable that our judicial system is placing thousands of people back into the shadows of this dysfunctional, harmful immigration system, unquote. The case is expected to end up in the Supreme Court. The International Organization for Migration has found the U.S.-Mexico border to be the world's deadliest land migration route.
The International Organization for Migration documented the deaths and disappearances of 686 migrants on the U.S.-Mexico border in 2022, making it the deadliest land route for migrants worldwide last year. The figure represents nearly half of the 1,457 migrant deaths and disappearances recorded throughout the Americas last year, the deadliest on record since the Missing Migrants Project began in 2014.
The UN agency said the true toll is likely to be much higher. Half the recorded deaths near the border are linked to the Sonoran and Chihuahuan deserts. The IOM called on governments to urgently create regular legal migration pathways to prevent further unnecessary tragedy. In Wisconsin, Republican leaders are moving ahead with plans to impeach newly elected liberal state Supreme Court Justice Janet Prusiewicz, whose landslide election victory in April gave progressives control of the court for the first time in 15 years. With her election, the court is now expected to restore abortion rights in Wisconsin and could overturn legislative and congressional district maps gerrymandered by Republicans. On Monday, Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss announced the creation of a panel to investigate whether to impeach Prusiewicz after she called the current maps unfair and rigged during her campaign. In a statement, the ACLU said, quote, the attacks on democracy happening in Wisconsin should raise alarm bells for Americans everywhere. Across the country, we're seeing increasingly authoritarian tactics being used to disenfranchise voters and delegitimize the electoral process, from baselessly ousting elected officials to election denialism to passing restrictions that make it harder to vote, the ACLU said. And Utah Republican Senator Mitt Romney said Wednesday he will not seek re-election in 2024, saying it's time for a new generation of leaders. The one-time Republican presidential nominee is one of the few members of the Republican Party to speak out against Donald Trump and was the only Republican to vote to convict Trump in both of his impeachment trials. He spoke to reporters after announcing his decision not to run for a second term.
Well, there's no question but that the Republican Party today is in the shadow of Donald Trump. He is the leader of the greatest portion of the Republican Party. It's a populist, I believe, demagogue portion of the party.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, Naomi Klein on Doppelganger, a trip into the mirror world. Stay with us. in by foreigner. Here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Today, we make a trip into the mirror world. The acclaimed writer Naomi Klein has a new book out this week that delves deeply into the culture of conspiracy theories and a growing alliance between the far right and people who once identified as progressive. The book comes as Robert F. Kennedy Jr. campaigns against Joe Biden for the Democratic nomination for president. Kennedy, who was once a prominent environmental lawyer, is now a leading figure in the anti-vaccine movement. In July, Kennedy made headlines after claiming, quote, COVID-19 is targeted to attack Caucasians and black people. He went on to say Ashkenazi Jews and Chinese are most immune to COVID. One notable defender of Kennedy's claims was the writer Naomi Wolf, who's best known for her 1991 book, The Beauty Myth. In a Substack post, Wolf defended Kennedy, writing, quote, RFK Jr. is cursed and blessed with a passion for actual truth. She wrote. Kennedy and Wolf have both been embraced by the far right. Republican mega donors are helping to bankroll Kennedy's long shot presidential campaign, while Wolf is now a regular guest on Steve Bannon's podcast, The War Room, where she spreads conspiracy theories about COVID vaccines and other issues. Former Fox News host Tucker Carlson has also praised Naomi Wolf, saying she is, quote, one of the bravest, clearest thinking people I know.
Well, Naomi Wolf plays a central role in Naomi Klein's new book titled Doppelganger, A Trip into the Mirror World. Klein examines how and why more and more people started confusing her with Wolf as Naomi Wolf fell deeper into what Naomi Klein called the mirror world, where facts no longer matter. Naomi Klein writes in the book, quote, the trouble with the mirror world, there is always some truth mixed in with the lies, always some devastating collective failure it's identified and is opportunistically exploiting, unquote. In a moment, Naomi Klein will join us live. But first, we play a short video produced along with the book.
Hi, I'm Naomi Klein. And as some of you know, I have a doppelganger. A person who does many extreme things that cause strangers to chastise me or thank me or express their pity for me. I used to be horrified by this, but then something happened that I didn't expect. I got interested. Interested in what it means to have a doppelganger. So I decided to follow my doppelganger to a place I've come to think of as the mirror world. It's a strange mirror image of the world where I live. It's a place where many ideas that I care about are being twisted and warped into dangerous doppelganger versions of themselves. When I look at the mirror world, I don't see disagreements over a shared reality. I see disagreements about what is real and what is a simulation. And with AI generating more and more of what we see and hear, it's only getting harder to distinguish the authentic from the synthetic. After all, artificial intelligence is a mirroring and mimicry machine. We feed in the cumulative words, ideas, and images that our species has managed to create. And these programs mirror back to us something that feels uncannily lifelike. But it's not life. It's a forgery of life. I shadowed my double further into the mirror world, a place where soft-focused wellness influencers make common cause with fire-breathing far-right propagandists, all in the name of saving and protecting the children. Not everyone is dogged by their doppelganger, but our culture is crowded with all kinds of doubling. All of us who maintain a persona or avatar online are kind of creating our own doppelgangers, forging a separate public identity that is both us and not us. A doppelganger, we perform for one another as the price of admission in a rapacious attention economy. And all the while, tech companies create digital profiles of us without our full knowledge.
data doubles, or golems, that follow us everywhere we go online, carrying their own agenda, their own logics, and their own threats.
What is all of this doubling and doppelganging doing to us? How is it steering what we pay attention to, and more critically, what we neglect and ignore? Doppelgangers are often understood as a warning or an omen, a message that something needs our attention. Reality is doubling, multiplying, glitching, telling us to pay attention. Because it's not just individuals who can flip into a sinister version of themselves. The Earth can transform into a menacing, uncanny twin of what we once knew. Whole societies can flip. That's the reason many doppelganger works of art are ultimately about the latent potential for fascism within our societies, even within ourselves. What I've learned by shadowing my double is that the forces that have destabilized my personal world are part of a much larger web of forces that are destabilizing our shared world. And understanding these forces may be our best hope of getting to firmer ground.
That video featured Naomi Klein, author of the new book, Doppelganger, A Trip into the Mirror World. Naomi Klein is an award-winning author and journalist. She's professor of climate justice at the University of British Columbia, founding co-director of the UBC Center for Climate Justice. Her previous books include On Fire, The Burning Case for a Green New Deal, The Shock Doctrine, The Rise of Disaster Capitalism. This Changes Everything, Capitalism versus the Climate. No Logo, Taking Aim at the Brand Bullies. Naomi is also a columnist for The Guardian. She's joining us now from Washington, D.C., as she begins her book tour around the country. Naomi, welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you
with us.
And congratulations on the publication of this book. I like what the great artist and author Molly Crabapple said about your book, a dazzling, hallucinatory tour de force that takes the reader through shadow selves and global fascism, leaving them gasping by the end. So, Naomi, if you can explain more, this journey you took through the pandemic, into this mirror world, who your doppelganger is, and then go back tonight to 2011 and that moment in the loo where you talk about hearing women talk about you, or was it Naomi Wolf? Take it from there.
All right. Well, first of all, Amy and Armin, thank you so much for having me back on the show. It's such a pleasure to be with you. And thank you for airing that video. I just want to credit the director, Colby Richardson, who's an amazing video artist. So those of you who are listening just to the audio, I really encourage you to watch the video version because it gets really trippy. Amy, you listed some of my previous books in that lovely introduction. My books, Back to No Logo, my first book, which I wrote on the cusp of the new millennium, almost a quarter of a century ago, have been attempts to map our political moment. They've been attempts to make sense of moments of big shifts in our political world, our cultural world, and in the case of This Changes Everything, our physical world. And I would say that Doppelganger is an attempt to make a usable map of our moment. The thing is, our moment is a lot weirder and wilder than any I've ever lived through. There are all kinds of strange happenings at work, all kinds of uncanny events. So I thought in many ways that I needed to write in a different way, a way that sort of mirrored the wildness of now. And so, you know, I let myself have more fun with the writing. I wanted to re-find a voice that felt more like me, that felt more like the person who talks to their friends, that was more conversational. But also, Amy, you know, this project began during the pandemic, and I've written about large-scale collective shocks. That's what the shock doctrine was about. But I realized that in the past, you know, if I was covering Hurricane Katrina or the U.S. and U.K. invasion and occupation of Iraq or the Asian tsunami, I mean, these huge cataclysmic events, I was, you know, I think as you are, right, the journalist who comes in with a notepad, maybe a camera, and I'm interviewing other people about their shock. But really, I've had a reportorial distance. COVID was different. Nobody was outside of that shock. It upended my world as it upended all of our worlds. And in many ways, the world became uncanny and unfamiliar. Freud described the uncanny as that species of frightening in which that which was familiar becomes strange. I mean, think about Times Square during the pandemic. That is an uncanny apparition. It's something familiar that looks completely different. It's empty, one of the busiest places on Earth. But I think there are many kinds of uncanny experiences that we have in the world today. You know, I now live in British Columbia. We had an extreme weather event a couple of years ago called a heat dome, and hundreds of people died. Millions of marine creatures died. But what was most uncanny about the heat dome is it was not our weather. It was like somebody else's weather coming to a temperate rainforest. And so I thought by using the uncanniness of having a doppelganger, you asked about my doppelganger. I am perennially confused and conflated with another writer named Naomi Wolf, Naomi Wolf. And, you know, having that identity confusion is an extreme form of uncanniness, because what becomes unfamiliar is you. You see people and hear people talking about you, but it's not you. It's very destabilizing. So I thought, well, this is an interesting technique. And she really is less the subject of the book than a literary technique to get into these other kinds of uncanny forces. Should I tell the bathroom story, Amy?
Please.
You really want me to do it? Yeah, so the first chapter begins telling the story where, actually, I was in New York City to be part of Occupy Wall Street. I was at a march through the financial district at the height of Occupy Wall Street. And other people at that march, I needed to use a public restroom. And I was in one of these, you know, skyscrapers, and I don't remember exactly which building, but while in the restroom, I overheard a couple of people talking about me, being quite unkind, I must say, Amy. They were sort of drawling, like, did you read that article by Naomi Klein? Oh my God, she really doesn't understand our movement. She doesn't understand our demands. And I was sort of frozen in fear, but brought back all of my terrible high school memories. You know, these mean girls were talking about me. But as I listened, I realized, oh, they're not talking about me. They're talking about somebody else. So I came out of the stall and I met one of their eyes and I said, words that I have had to say, unfortunately, too many times, I think you're talking about Naomi Wolf. But in the end, that became quite fitting to me because, you know, I think when we overhear people speaking about us on social media, we essentially are just reading the graffiti on the bathroom wall, which is not healthy, and we probably should stop doing that. So I think it's fitting that the first time I became aware of the identity confusion in the real world, it was actually literally in a bathroom.
And let's just say that this weekend is the 12th anniversary of Occupy Wall Street.
Naomi, so it's been going on for some time.
Naomi, I'd like to just join Amy in congratulating you on this book. I mean, I know that I'm not alone in thinking this, that when I read it, I realize that it's actually the book that needed to be written. I mean, it's amazing the way you're simultaneously disclosive, funny, subtle, and so insightful about our present historical moment. So I want to ask about the reasons that it's the doppelganger effect that you identify is, of course, not just with Naomi Wolf. Naomi Wolf is almost like incidental.